Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Blog Talk Radio. I'm Russ Johnson. And we are trying something different this morning in terms of getting into the system. But let me do this. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 5, 4, 3. I have Jillian. And she wants to talk about something that's really unique and different and timely, if you will. So let's see if we can punch her up or get her online with me. 1 second here. 1 second. But let me play this. Laura Eisenhower.
Feeling, I don't know why, to have me at home. And back then, nobody was really having kids at home. I think she felt this need to protect me because I don't know what would have happened because I was pre-targeted before birth. And that's about all I know. But she had this instinct to make sure she had me at home. And, I mean, they do all sorts of things. They'll take your kids away. I mean, I remember after I gave birth to my kids, and they were considered high risk because they were twins, even though they were full
term.
Hello,
Jillian here.
They weighed a lot.
Sorry,
and
I can't take your call, but if you need me on
way
and your phone
number,
I will get back with you as soon as I can. Thanks for calling. Goodbye.
Having my kids in the hospital was not safe. And,
at the tone, please record your message. When you've finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options.
The shift is happening through the human race. It's not happening through anybody else. Because every power structure has been infiltrated. And the sickness behind this disregard for biological life is the transhumanism agenda, because transhumanism destroys all biological life eventually. And there's nowhere in any star system or galaxy that it's ever been successful. And as much as, well, this is what I heard from, you know, different whistleblowers, that they give people a chance to step away from it, telling them the ramifications of what transhumanism will do. But they don't care because they're in the life cycle of this harvesting, and you can't get any lower than, I mean, you can't get any lower than any level of it. It's all really low. So as you know, my perseverance in these sort of things that, you know, I join with you and I'll do anything that it takes to put these treaties to an end. And the thing is, you know, understanding the roots of them really helped, because, you know, the only reason I mentioned the Eisenhower thing was definitely not directed at you or anything that you said. It's just the amount of emails that I get shutting me down because, oh, this is, you know, look at what your great grandfather did, what a legacy. And it's like, you have no idea, there's a much bigger picture here. And, you know, if anybody wants to contact me directly for me to give them the information about where these originated and the infiltration that already took place before he stepped into government, and the fact that these breeding programs and this sort of thing has actually been happening since Atlantean times. They used to carry these advanced individuals off to Nibiru to breed with, took away all their rights as women. So, you know, we keep seeing the war changing and morphing into new forms of expression through the basic vampirism of the human soul and sexual life force in connection to spirit. And so, you know, and how that relates to the grids and this dumbing down of our DNA is, you know, the infection of these earth grids to keep us from being able to synthesize the masculine and feminine within our DNA. And the thing is, once we recognize what's been targeted, which is our own internal balance and unity consciousness, and we begin to push the envelope in really preserving the sacredness of those relationships and ourselves, and we really walk a path of integrity, they absolutely don't have anything on us. And nobody should be resistant to this. There's no instant gratification that is higher or better than devoting yourself to this and the long-term rewards that come along with choosing to be in alignment, because we're on timelines right now where we can be in our avatar consciousness, where we have more powers and abilities than we can imagine. But the whole deal is people are so infected or obsessed with the ego gratifications that feed them on an instant level that they don't even care about that. And so that reptilian part of our brain is what they're targeting. And that's just such a small part of the rest of all that we are. And it's an addiction matrix too. So we just, you know, really have to be strong in ourselves, because the more we rise up, all these imbalances will naturally iron themselves out, and more of this stuff is going to come to the light. And this is why where we are right now is, I have a good feeling about where we're heading, because a balance is returning. And in this process of sharing information and becoming more of a unified group of individuals, recognizing that we're in alignment with the ability really integrate this and get those downloads and have those epiphanies, this is all purging. It's a mass exorcism. And I'm sure I remember saying this in an interview with you before, that it's like a mass exorcism is underway. And even these trolls that come on these threads, it's like, I call it a pea soup moment. Oh, they're just having a pea soup. They're just emoting their demonic ways. I don't know. They're very threatened. And the thing is, it's like, you know, the reassurance is there's unconditional love from source. For us humans, it might take a while to forgive, but we have a direct connection with that unconditional love. And anybody can turn it around. And it's time to stop. It's like, because the thing is, these negative technologies are going to expire. Transhumanism is getting busted. People, you know, aren't buying into those timelines, which is weakening them. And if they can get so weak to a point where they become space dust and they don't exist at all. So.
Hi, good morning. Good morning. Good morning. That was Laura Eisenhower. Jillian, are you with us?
Oh, good morning.
Yeah, now I was trying to get you on. And I was bringing you on, and anyway, I won't go through the technological difficulty
right.
I'm having this morning. But
Here we are.
That was Laura Eisenhower, you know, the granddaughter, great-great-granddaughter of President Eisenhower. And she was just talking about transhumanism and soul development and all that, and that we do have choices and da-da-da-da. But anyway, so to follow up with what she was talking about, we were talking about, as I was looking through your book, let me indicate to the audience that this is Jillian Green, and she's an intuitive and a psychic and a clairvoyant person, and that's what you've been doing for many, many years, teaching and traveling, not only here in the United States, but abroad, that you help people in other countries. But I'm looking at a book that you have written, ETA, is written from the unique point of view of spirit, not the point of view of a man, and it encompasses the long-term interaction between extraterrestrials and earthbound humans whose positions are interchangeable. Let's talk about that one statement. What do you mean by interchangeable? How can we interchange our personality, our soul, with extraterrestrials?
Oh, okay. Well, here's the thing. That first of all, I don't remember what I wrote in that book. I'd have to pull a copy of it. But here's the thing, that when I say the souls are interchangeable with extraterrestrials, what I'm talking about is the fact that how do you know that next time you reincarnate, you will reincarnate on this planet and in this particular form? Now, if you are an Earth human, meaning you began your soul's experiences in form on this planet, then yes, you very likely will choose to keep coming back to this planet. You also are required to keep coming back to the planet until you have finished all the lessons which your soul feels it needs to learn and that it can only experience in this particular environment as an Earth human on the planet Earth. However, once you have finished the learning process that you wish to go through using the advantages that are available on Earth exclusively, then you will have the freedom of choice when you get to the other side to go to another planet. And supposing you do decide, for example, to go to Sirius and have a living experience in a body on Sirius. And while you're there, you decide that you will join their extra planetary military activities, and you will come from there to Earth on a visit, to work, whatever. Well, then when you get back to Earth, you will be an extraterrestrial on this planet. In other words, any time you go somewhere else and incarnate and then come back to Earth, as far as Earth humans are concerned, you will be an extraterrestrial. Does that make sense to you?
Of course, because you're coming back as another kind of entity, and probably with more powers.
Exactly. So, no, well, maybe, maybe not. I don't know. You know, you may or may not have more abilities, but not necessarily. Earth humans are highly, highly skilled beings. The fact that they are not yet a star-faring species it's only a matter of time and technology. The actual abilities that any Earth humans have is equal to anybody else's. Well, you're not, just because you're born on another planet doesn't mean that you are in some way as an ensoul being more in any particular way. You simply are using different skills, but the skills are available to all the human race throughout the universe. Any human on any planet, we only think of them as extraterrestrial because that's literally what they are. They are off this planet. But they're not extraterrestrials on their own planet. They are humans experiencing on another planet.
Right.
We're talking about the human race.
You.
As it exists, they may look somewhat different, yes, but in general, not that much different. Not necessarily a great deal different. And we're talking about the human race in the context of beings granted the privilege of an individual life force where they can develop their own individual souls through their own choices. And that this is embodied in beings throughout the universe. And we call these beings that have this individual soul granted by the Creator, we call these beings the human race. And they're spread throughout the universe. They're not just on Earth.
Okay. But there are billions and billions and billions, from what I understand, of planets, of universes out there. Am I right? Hello?
Well, there are billions of bodies of planetary material. How many hundreds of thousands or millions of them are capable of sustaining human life in one form or another? I don't know. I mean,
okay,
a lot. In our quadrant of the universe, right, in our little piece of it up and down the Milky Way, and remember, we're pretty much at the tag end of our quadrant of the universe, up and down the Milky Way, there's maybe a few hundred thousand, maybe.
That's a lot.
It's a lot, but I'm talking about planets capable of sustaining life. How many of them have actually got developed species on is another matter. I would say that, despite what people talk about when they say hundreds of billions and millions and da-da-da, the big numbers, my surmise, based on my own information and knowledge, which is not accurate in this respect, Garrett, I would say that probably if we have 1,000 to somewhere between 1 and 10,000 developed planets with highly evolved civilizations on, it's more than that. And I'll tell you why I don't think it's more than that. It's a lot, yes, but it's not really in terms of the whole universe, it's not a lot. But the reason I think that is because I have been told quite specifically that there are not more than 5,000 highly evolved time lords in our whole quadrant of the universe. And when I say these time lords, what do I mean? I mean beings like the one we knew as Christ, right? A true master who is capable of manifesting both in physical form or in spirit form at will and can move in and out of time at will. That is a true time lord. And I am assured that there are not more than 5,000 of them in our end of the universe, meaning in all the parts of the universe that we are aware of, which is a very, very big space to only, and has been there a very, very long time, to have only evolved 5,000 beings. In other words, if there were millions of planets and hundreds of millions of people on the planet for hundreds and thousands of millions of years since the beginning of the universe, you would think that by now there'd be more than 5,000 had evolved to that level. But there haven't been. So we're talking about lesser numbers. We're not really talking about the big numbers when it comes to people.
So you believe that Christ, Jesus, if you will, has came to this planet to do what?
To teach.
What was his goal, objective?
To teach.
To teach. Okay, what? Teach us
to
what?
To teach people how to arrive at that point to teach people how to make the right kind of choices to move their soul's experience forward so that they no longer had to experience physical death and rebirth in order to continue learning and evolving as immortal beings.
Uh-huh.
That's the whole of his message, really.
But that's not what it says in the Bible. But yes, it does. And in a sense, but they teach something different. It does? Okay.
Yes.
Go right ahead.
What I've just said is exactly what it says in the Bible. All his stories, all the things he tells you to do, if you read them carefully, are geared to saying, this is the way when you're in a physical body, this is the way to live, this is what you must do, and this is how you must do it if you wish to conquer death, if you wish to become a true immortal and never have to do this reincarnational cycle again, right? Now, he exemplifies that when he says, if you do as I, and I'm paraphrasing, of course, if you do as I tell you, you can have immortal life. But if you go your own way and don't pay attention and do as I'm saying, you will die. And what does he mean by that? He means actual death with no more chances, no more opportunities to come forward. Your soul, in other words, you as a being cease to exist. Your divine spark, which is within you, and the knowledge which your soul has already acquired, that belongs to the universe and will always stay with the universe. But you as a conscious being, knowing yourself, having self-awareness, you will cease to exist. Just the same as plants and flowers die, just the same as they disappear into the soil. You will be changed out of existence, let's put it that way. You as an individual will not continue on. Your energy, the energy which was divinely given to you in the first place, that's never lost. That returns to the source. But you, your self-awareness, that can disappear forever. And this is what Christ tells you. You'll just be tied to the wheel of reincarnation over and over again, like a mouse going round a wheel, never actually getting anywhere. And when this whole environment in which you are reincarnating, in which you are having this rebirth process, when that ceases to exist in the universe, and ultimately, everything physical and manifest is transitory. Everything ceases to exist at some point. It goes extinct, disappears forever. And once the environment in which you are experiencing over and over again reaches that point of extinction in the universe, then you're extinct with it. You're gone forever. And so Christ is teaching you how to be an immortal. How to not be gone, how to continue on.
Okay, give me the lessons. Let's assume I just got here. And I really haven't read the Bible to really understand it, to comprehend it thoroughly.
Well, the thing is that they don't need to read the whole Bible if they don't want to. That's choice. Don't need to read any of it if they don't want to, because all the major belief structures on the planet, it teach in principle the same thing. And Christ was just one of Muhammad followed him, of course, the prophet Muhammad. And Muhammad teaches the same thing. Kuan Yin taught the same thing. Buddha taught the same thing. And it's the principle, basically, of do unto others as you would be done by. That's
but
the fundamental
teaching. That's
right.
That's the foundation of living, then. We should be thinking about in terms of those. Is that right? But most of us, as I look around, war, pestilence, disease, jealousy, hate, da-da-da, garden going on and on, we're not practicing that.
Well, we're not. We're not practicing it for a very good reason. Because,
why?
Sadly, this planet and almost everything on this planet is run from fear, not from loving care of each other and loving care of the creation in which we live and love for the creator who gave it all to us to experience with. We rather have allowed ourselves to be brainwashed into a fear stance. Everything we do from fear, not love, right?
Okay.
I mean, just think about that for a moment. The how many times, and I was just thinking about this myself this morning, not just the big fear, like, oh, well, we're conditioned by religion to fear hell and damnation, and we're conditioned by the government to fear a disease like COVID if we don't do what the government tells us. So not forget those big fears, right, which are easy for us all to see, and think about all the little fears. There is an expression we use, I'm afraid. I am afraid. Think how many times we use that expression. I'm afraid I will be late for supper. I'm afraid I can't come on Saturday. I'm afraid I have to cancel my dental appointment. I'm afraid my child is not going to pass their exams at school. That expression, I'm afraid, we use it as commonplace language every single day. And every time we use it, we are reinforcing fear within ourselves. And I just realized it this morning when I said the same thing to somebody. I said, I'm afraid I can't do that today. And I stopped and thought, why am I afraid I can't do it? What is there to be afraid of? I should have said, I won't be doing that today, or I'm choosing not to do that today, or I have something else I'm not doing. I should not be saying I'm afraid of it, or I'm afraid to tell them that I can't do it. And this is such a little thing, but we all do it almost every day of our lives. I guarantee at some point we use that expression. And every time we use it, we are reinforcing our subconscious to tell us we need to be afraid. And the truth is, we need to be afraid of nothing, because there is nothing in this world that anybody can do with us or to us that we should be afraid of. The worst thing anybody seems to be able to do to us is kill us. One way or another, they can kill us, right? But why should we even be afraid of that? Because once we are dead, we are opening up into a much larger expanse of life than we experience on this planet, where we are confined to a physical body. Right, life here is much more restrictive than it is in our spirit form. So why would we even be afraid of being dead? So really, we need to get out of this fear mode. We're not ever going to be able to lift ourselves up into the true beings we are, so long as we stay in this fear mode. So every time we find ourselves saying I'm afraid or thinking we're afraid of something, we need to stop right there and rechange our thinking. Start repatterning our thinking. And instead of being afraid, being thankful. Just say, I'm not afraid, I'm thankful. I'm thankful that this experience is here. I'm, you know, thankful of this opportunity. Right?
I'm grateful.
Get rid of this fear. I'm grateful.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Just be thankful for things.
Okay, good lesson. But you, when we talk about Krishna, Buddha, Baha'u'llah, you know, Jesus Christ, and on, Mohammed, we are talking about these are entities coming. These people are coming from another part of the universe to teach us how to become immortal. Is that right? Is that what I hear you say?
Yes. We can say in principle yes, but they're not necessarily from another part of the universe. They are possibly great souls who have advanced on this planet and reincarnated here to bring back that message. Don't think that some of them aren't already evolved humans. I don't know which might be and which might not be, but I would not discount that as a possibility. I would think it's very possible that somebody like Buddha is a highly advanced human who previously had been here many, many times, and in that last incarnation came back as an enlightened soul to teach his fellow man.
Okay.
So they're not all from other places.
All right. So they didn't come from Andromeda. They didn't come from Syria. They came, they were maybe here and reincarnated here.
Some did.
Okay.
And some did not. I don't know all the difference, but for example, I do know one who came from Andromeda at the time of the pharaohs, and that was Akhenaten. Akhenaten came from the Andromeda spiral galaxy, from some planet over in the Andromeda area, and he came to Earth to bring the teaching of a living God, one living God, or the All, the Source. Right? And he was the one who first brought that teaching to this planet in this cycle of this planet's experience. That was Akhenaten with his wife Nefertiti. And they were from Andromeda, bringing that teaching, which is the teaching of all the great teachers, that there is a living source of creation somewhere out there that's the great mystery that nobody knows. Despite their claims that, you know, God is this, God is that, God is the other thing, nobody actually knows. But we do know that it is a living something out there that created all of this, that there is intelligence behind all creation, and that we're part of it.
Right.
You know, there's
right.
something I was thinking about when I was out walking this morning, if I can say this, right?
Sure.
And I think it's something that maybe we don't think of often enough, that as I was looking around, I'm in Montana, as you know, and it's a beautiful, absolutely gorgeous morning, and it's the holiday weekend, and I was thinking about that on my morning walk and thanking the Creator for this wonderful environment and hoping that everybody was enjoying something similar of joy and beauty and happiness this special weekend. And I thought, you know, it really is time that we as humans came to really, really understand who we are and to take our place in this universe. Because we tend to forget we are all children of the Creator. Now, Christ himself, when he gave his disciples the Lord's Prayer, he taught them to say, Our Father. Our Father. He didn't say, pray to my Father. He said, pray to our Father. And that is so important because we tend to forget that we are each and every soul, all 8 billion of us currently, wherever we began in the universe and the fact that we're here on Earth right now, we are all children of the Source, children of the All, part of that totality, equal parts of that totality. There is no soul better than another. Some have learned more than others. Some are still have a lot to learn. And so instead of being down on ourselves and lacking in self-worth, what I was thinking about at the time was that maybe we, you know, maybe we're too selfish, maybe we're too ungrateful, maybe we are not thankful enough. And I thought to myself, maybe we're too full of self-importance and pride. And then I thought, wait a minute, stop this, Jillian. Stop talking to yourself in this way. But rather think, we should be proud. We should have pride in who we are. Because each and every one of us on this planet is a child of a king, a child of a god, a child of the ultimate totality of the universe. And we should take joy in that, and we should take pride in it, and we should be thankful for it and grateful for it to that creative source. And we should stop bemoaning our fate and stand up and say, this is who I am. And then we need to look at ourselves, and we can say to ourselves, boy, I've really screwed up because I made a mess of this. I didn't do well for that. I behaved badly, right? I have behaved badly. I need to start correcting myself. And that's where we should be, not punishing ourselves, because nobody is going to punish us. We need to straighten ourselves out, recognizing who we are, not looking at ourselves, you know, some poor person who's had great problems in life and lost everything, and, you know, like Job, they've really lost everything they've ever had and ended up an alcoholic, a wino, a street person in terrible circumstances. But they don't need to look at themselves and say, I'm ashamed of myself. Look at the state I'm in. What they need to do is say, hey, wait a minute. I got into this terrible state as a result, somewhat of my choices, somewhat of other people's choices, and now I'm a big mess, but I am still the child of a god. So let me do what I can to pick myself up, be sorry for my mistakes, try and correct myself, and move forward. There is no soul on this planet in such deplorable circumstances, which they have brought on themselves, that they cannot take responsibility for and get over and start again. Every single one of us can get over our past mistakes, and all we have to do is follow the rule of put others before ourselves and accept responsibility for our own lives and try the best we can. You actually get gold stars for trying. Nobody's out there waiting to punish you or send you to hell or damn you for all eternity. I promise you that is never going to happen to you, no matter what they tell you, provided you recognize your mistakes and say you're sorry, like a child, because you are a child. You are a child of the ultimate creator of this universe, and there is nothing that cannot and will not be forgiven you and excused you if you take responsibility and really say, Father in heaven, God the creator, the source, the ultimate whole, I do love you in my heart, and I am sorry for the mess I've made, and I want to start over. Always be able to start over. I'm sorry, I went on a bit there, I know, but that was spirit this morning. Spirit. I hope it helps somebody. Mm.
Well, of course, we all need help because people are stumbling around. They don't. Most people suffer from lack of self-esteem, self-image. They kick themselves. They tear themselves apart in terms of growing and developing, and that's the problem that we see in people in business, people in schools. They just don't know who they are. But you're
right.
Saying that we're part. Go ahead.
No, carry on. Well, what I was going to say was that a dear friend of mine.
I'm sorry?
A dear friend of mine had a wonderful saying, and
okay.
I've repeated it many times. She used to say to people, get off the cross. Stop crucifying yourself and be the shining star you were created to be. And that absolutely puts it in a nutshell. that every soul is created to be like a shining star. So stop crucifying yourself and punishing yourself, and because really that all comes out of ego anyway. You know, it's our ego self that wants to mostly destroy our confidence. It's the funniest kind of thing, but that's what happens. We destroy ourselves. But I'm sorry, I interrupted you. What were you saying, Russell?
No. I was just saying the same thing. Basically, when George was here, you passed your partner, he used to say, the prayer of the day should be, I am a human being, help me to become human. That's what he used to say. Sure.
Right.
Please, what
I am a human being becoming, help me. I am a human being becoming, help me to become. Yes.
Right.
Because everything is in transition. All the time, every single thing, anything that we know in any moment is always the past. If you hold a mirror, if you look in a mirror, right, if you look at yourself in a mirror, and I said to you, are you looking at yourself now in this moment? Your instinct would be to say, yes, I'm looking in the mirror right now. But in reality, the moment that you are looking at yourself in that mirror, that moment is already past. By the time the image reaches your eyes put it in your brain, and your brain registers what you're seeing, it's already past. Maybe only nanoseconds, but it is absolutely impossible to know anything in that way, in the material world, to know anything that's not already in the past. It's already behind you.
Right, right.
The trick is to learn what the past is teaching you. You're never going to move forward and progress spiritually or in any other way. You're not going to progress materially in this world, and if you can't progress in this world, you're certainly not going to progress in the world of spirit either, if you cannot learn from the past. To fail to learn from the past means that you are doomed to repeat it in the future. So the living in the now is more a recognition of what is going on moment to moment. And that relates to how you move forward. So at any given moment, you are a human being, and you are in this moment as it exists in a state of moving into the next moment based on what happened in the last moment. In the last moment, you made a choice which was an intrinsically good choice just in that moment. Then in this moment, you are processing that choice that you just made into your next moment, and your next moment will be a good moment because it's coming out of the good choice you just made. But if in the last moment you made a horrible choice, then you are progressing through this moment into the next moment, which will manifest a very unpleasant result because you made a bad choice. Life really is like that. It's moment to moment to moment. Every moment we are creating the next moment, and we are creating it by our choices, whether we think we are or not. The problem is, and this is where the problem occurs for all of us, nobody is exempt from this, that we as individuals have been reincarnating hundreds of times, maybe thousands of times, say on this planet. Let's just address our soul's life on this planet. We have maybe had 100 incarnations on this planet. And in each incarnation, we have made, as well as the good choices that moved us forward, we have made some poor choices, even bad choices, that were detrimental to our advancement. And we never learned from those poor choices. Therefore, we never recognized them, and we chose to ignore them and not correct them. So now, after 100 incarnations where we never chose to correct any of our poor choices, we are left with this huge emotional pile of buildup of poor choices, which we call karma. And for most people on the planet, as we move towards the end of this historic cycle for humans on this earth, as we move towards the end of this cycle, most of us have a huge pile of unfinished business, karmic bad choices that we did not correct and we did not learn from, that we have been doomed to repeat over and over again and have never corrected them. So now we have, let's say, only 3% or 5% of our free will expression available to us in this lifetime, because the other 95% is piled up with trying to clean up the mess from the past. And this is why I think so many of us in this lifetime are experiencing so many unpleasant, difficult, and downright bad situations that we're having to deal with, chaotic situations. It's because of we haven't cleaned up our mess as we went along. We haven't examined our lives moment to moment and made corrections. That's why I always suggest to people, make sure at the end of every day that you glance back at the day before you go to sleep and say, did I do anything really? Did I make any really bad choices during this day that I've just lived? And if you find you did, then go to sleep with a determined effort to straighten those choices out, to make amends and correct the errors that you made. Don't let it pile up on you, because it will only get worse.
Here's a big question. The big question of you is, how many times have you been here that you can remember, and why keep coming back here? That's
okay.
My question to you. That's my question.
Maybe my story might be a little different from most people, because the majority of people are right now on Earth, not all, but large numbers, belong to Earth. I did not begin on Earth. I came to this planet as an extraterrestrial, and my most recent return to this planet was 15,000 years ago. And I came as an long-life extraterrestrial, and I lived on this planet for a very long time without dying. I then was in South America at one point, about 4,000 or 5,000 years ago, 4.5, just over 4,000 years ago. And I was killed, and I was killed in such a way that the actual energy of my soul energy, you just have to realize that nothing can't be something, and that something which is something is never nothing, right? And that's true of energy. So the soul energy, when it's in form, in a body, is housed in hydrogen molecules. And I was killed at that time in such a way that my hydrogen molecules, in other words, my soul energy itself, was fractured, was damaged, and was disrupted and scattered all over. And therefore, I could not immediately leave this planet. I was trapped, you might say, energetically trapped on this planet. And the only way I could continue and work towards recollecting my own soul energy was by reincarnating over and over again as an Earth human. And so to my recollection, I've had about somewhere between 12 and 20 Earth human incarnations. I may have had a lot more that I don't remember, or some that were too short to have any credence. But the ones that I actually remember are somewhere a dozen or more than a dozen that I remember coming back as an Earth human to this planet. And that began almost immediately after I was killed, I started reincarnating. So I was in Egypt at one point. I was in Rome. And about regular incarnations from about 2,500 years ago, there was a couple of times with Rome. There were two or three times in France, twice in France, several times in Europe generally. In England, I was incarnating in England several times, where I came from this last time. This last incarnation was in England. The incarnations in England began at the time of Elizabeth I and the Reformation, and then the Reformation, that whole period in history. Europe was the Middle Ages, 13, 1400s. I was in the middle in Europe. So several incarnations, and most of them having powerful, for me, powerful spiritual connotations. I've been burnt at the stake twice for being a healer, although in many times I've been a healer. One time I was an American Indian in North America, and I was the tribal sorceress, the healer with the tribe. In Europe, I did healing work in the plague in Europe. I was actually an alchemist, two or three lives with as an alchemist, a herbalist, a healer. And that all stems from ancient times in Lemuria. So one way or another, for a very long time, and as an Anunnaki, when I came to this planet back 14,000 years ago, I was in the medical profession then. So I've always been associated one way or another with healing. Of course, in this lifetime, I was a registered nurse. So healing has been the path for me for as long as I can remember. And my work as a clairvoyant was always involved with healing at soul level, trying to show people how their life related to their soul's development in this lifetime. So that was always my work as a clairvoyant when I was doing readings for people.
All right. But this time, here you are, a young, 84 years old, right? Something like that. And you're talking about coming back again. Why would you not do whatever you have to do this time and forego the fact that you have to come back?
This time, it is my intention to come back. Not, I mean, I will be like just looking like an Earth human, but I intend to come back as my, let's say, extraterrestrial self. In other words, I intend to come back in a body which is different, not looking different, but molecularly different, so that I can get my longevity back and I can come on and off the planet. I won't be born again to this planet. I will be coming back fully grown. I will not be coming back born again as an Earth human. I will be coming back as a fully grown being, if you like, in my little spaceship, if you want to think of it that way. I'll be coming back
then,
as my extraterrestrial self to work on this planet.
Then before you were here as an Anunnaki, you lived thousands of years, right?
Yes, I did.
Earth time, thousands of years, right? Because there's a difference between Earth time and,
right,
and the time that people...
Right. When I came back to this planet in terms of Earth years, I was like a 70. I was celebrating my 17th birthday in Earth counting years when I re-entered the solar system and came back to the planet 14,500 years ago. In terms of my own years, sorry, I was 17. But if I'd been counting in terms of Earth years, I would have been 17 times 60-odd thousand years old. But I was, but in terms of my own years, I was only 17. I was just a teenager. That's why sometimes, Russell, when you ask me things, you know, about the Anunnaki or about the history of the Anunnaki, some things I don't remember any more than if you asked, you know, your average teenager in high school about World War II or World War I on Earth. They wouldn't remember all about it. Because they're just teenagers. Well, I was just a teenager. I was only, 17, 18, 19. I was only 20 years old when I was killed. In terms of my Anunnaki years, I was still a kid. You know, that's why when you ask me questions about
these things. Did Joseph know all of this? Did Joseph know all your background?
No.
He didn't know who you were? No.
Somewhat. But let's put it this way. He didn't. George never believed anything I told him.
Okay. But if George didn't, and you were married to George, what, 10 years?
Oh, longer than that.
Okay.
And remember, I knew George was my best friend for nearly 40 years. We were married for 12 years. And yes, he knew my history. He knew my history. I don't know how much of it he accepted or how much of it he agreed with. Perhaps that's a better way. He knew it, but he didn't necessarily agree with it. And I think he didn't necessarily agree with it because he was working with and for the Pleiadians directly, right? The Quetzal, the ones that called themselves Quetzal and Semyasi, who were not really Pleiadians, but do work with the Pleiadians. That's true. And were representing the Pleiadians to George. And so he was working with them. And I think George had a kind of a resistance to accepting things which I would say to him that I hold to be true, right? Simply because they were at variance with the agenda of the Pleiadians, or he himself did not know the full agenda of the Pleiadians any more than I do, or anybody else does, it seems. Right? The Pleiadians come out with everybody that you talk to who has interaction with the Pleiadians, comes across as if they have nothing but a message of love, sweetness, and light. But I am not so certain of that, because they have not yet told anybody what their true agenda is.
So you're not enamored with the Pleiadians, if I may, if I'm listening to you, the Pleiadians from the Pleiades, you're not terribly taken in by them. Is that what I hear you say? Can you hear me? I think I lost her for whatever reason.
Oh, hello, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hello.
Yes, can you hear me?
I don't know what happened then. Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
Maybe they didn't want you to answer that question. The question is...
Maybe they didn't want me to say it. Maybe they didn't want me to say that I question the agenda of the Pleiadians, because I do.
Why would they block you?
Maybe they don't want anybody questioning them, especially as they work with the government.
So you believe the Pleiadians? That was interesting. Yeah, the Pleiadians work with the government. Well, you think they work with my labs, like Corey Good and David Wilcox talk about my labs, the government. There are a group of aliens who work with my lab. With the government,
right,
to abduct people, right?
We can, but let me just say what I am saying. I am saying that nobody
right.
knows what the true gender of the Pleiadians is. We don't know what the gender of most of the extraterrestrials is, right? We really don't know what their true agenda is. So we should be questioning it all. And to
all
go back
them,
to
I
where
mean,
we
you
were
have the
with Grays, George.
The reptilians, you have the Nordics, you have the...
Right.
We don't know.
We need to
so
question,
we, none of
we
us
need
be
to
trusted.
Question all of them.
Uh-huh.
Well, you know, what
that's,
do you tell children?
Job.
Don't talk to strangers. You tell children, don't talk to strangers. Is that true? Don't good parents say to their kids, and when you're
yeah,
out playing,
yeah,
if some
yeah,
stranger
yeah.
comes up to you and promises you candy, don't take it and don't talk to them, right? Well, what I'm saying is the same applies to the extraterrestrials. Until we know their agenda, yes.
Okay. Isn't there a galactic command, or yes or no?
Yes.
Okay. And that's comprised of tens or hundreds or whatever, dozens and dozens of different species all coming together to achieve some kind of objective. Is that right? Yes or no?
Yes.
Okay. They have to have some trust in what as they come together and negotiate whatever goals, objectives that they have in mind collectively, right? Don't they trust each other?
Yes.
Isn't there some kind of trust?
Do they trust each
yes.
other? I would say no. I would say no.
No. They have arms
do
length.
Let me ask you this. We're talking about the Galactic Command right now. Let me push it this way. We live on one planet with multiple countries on it. Do we
right.
trust every other country? When we have,
no.
when all the nations are trying to keep world peace and sweetness and light across the whole planet, do we all trust one another?
No.
No,
we
don't.
We try to.
Right.
No,
so
no,
why would anyone think that if a planet as small as Earth, with only 300 or whatever it is countries on it, if those few hundred countries cannot trust one another and cooperate and work together forever in peace and harmony, whatever makes people think that something like the Galactic Command that's all over the universe, you might imagine, right? All trust
but
one
they,
another and all love one
oh,
another.
Okay. Don't they communicate enlarge
with,
by telepathy?
The individual units, many of them, not all of them, many of them do. Many of the more
okay, but,
highly evolved species do. Yes.
Okay. But the They're human
not all,
beings
look,
on this... Go ahead. I don't want
well,
to cut you off. Go ahead.
We have to, okay. What I want to say about this is that we need to get a bit of reality into this kind of conversations that people in general have about extraterrestrials. So let's be practical here. Whatever makes you think that they're all highly evolved, did we suddenly become magically highly evolved when we discovered the atom bomb? No. So why would we think that all the beings in the universe who've discovered star travel beyond the speed of light, right, are all highly evolved? They are not. They don't all have everybody else's best interest at heart by any means. Power, control, management, ownership, getting ahead, these are kinds of thinking that go on throughout the universe, right? Some species are good and some species are not so good. If you, I said this the other day and I know it sounds a bit stupid, but there is a reality in it. If you really want an idea of what the universe is like, watch Star Trek. They have really good data and up-to-date information backing their fairy tale stories of the adventures of Star Trek. they're not as stupid as you think. And if you remember, there are many in those stories, there are many warlike groups out there. There are many groups that don't have human interests at heart. And this is absolutely true. The universe and its varieties is no different than planet Earth and its varieties, including its mistrust or its trust. Either way.
Excellent point. Excellent point. Go ahead, by the way. Go ahead.
So when we think about the relationship with the extraterrestrials, and we should all be thinking about this at this point in time, because we're not far from the day when the extraterrestrials are going to be openly known and discussed and talked about across the face of this planet. They're not going to be hiding from everybody much longer. Very soon, I am sure that everybody is going to be knowing that they are here.
And you think that's
going to
happen in August? Today is July 2nd, 2022.
Yes.
Now,
I think in about six weeks' time, it could start leaking out in the news.
They're
going to
be making themselves
public.
Known. I mean,
the government is going to be making them known. Yes. I really think
the government has been hiding for eons.
I know.
The governments of the world, not just the United States. I'm talking about Peru and
the whole planet. The whole planet.
There's a conspiracy of hiding this information from us. And so as we talk, many people, probably 80-90% of the people say something is wrong with those people talking like that. What are they talking about? None of that is true, and it's impossible. You're talking about we have dozens of incarnations, and we can come and go, and we can go to Andromeda, and we can become as extraterrestrial with the powers of technology and knowledge and spirit. They don't believe that. They don't even believe they're coming back. That is even possible to come back. Okay.
Yeah, I know.
What are you talking?
Yes.
They believe, as they were trained by the Catholic Church or the Protestant or the Methodist or the Baptist Church or the Holy Roly or whatever, the Mormon Church, they believe what they've been taught, and that's it. And when we talk what we are saying today, they not only look at us that something is wrong with
this conversation.
They think
you're crazy.
That we,
right.
Absolutely.
Right.
And that's why...
Let's just correct some of this.
Okay. All right. Go ahead.
That's why what? I want to know that's why what?
I'm saying that's why for the last 40, 50, 60, 70, 80 years, when George was running around the planet, Wendell Stevens, Colonel Phillips, Lyndon Newton Howe, Laura Eisenhower, all of whom have been doing research, massive research, and Dr. Seller, Michael Seller, all of them have been doing all telling the people, hey, listen, this is true. And all the people ignore them because they just don't believe any of that because they're not trained to believe any of that. Do you understand? Do you understand? Listen, your friend, George Green, he says it this way, right?
Your physical reality that you have, based on this physical life that you have, this dream, is made up of the experiences that is impregnated on your body and in your mind, consciously, right?
Mm-hmm.
Your soul memory is another thing. It goes back whatever time that you've elected to be in this incarnation for whatever reason. Now, let's show you the division on these things. Since the body is very physical, and we just got you making a physical being in a few months for spare parts, they said, now we've got the perfect deal. How can we have that work better? Well, if you go to the hospital today and get an encephalogram, what's that? That's the memory of your conscious mind. It's on the CD. Let's download it on this being. Now we got a walking, talking duplicate that has the total memory that you have, because we just took it off of your own mind.
Okay, it's like Blade Runner, the android.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. The only thing is that it's like this DVD recorder. Sometimes you have glitches in
Okay. All right. But I just want to play a little bit of that.
Okay,
go ahead.
Yeah.
Because they didn't believe George. They thought George was a nutcase. I used to interview George in 1992. That's 30 years ago.
If they wanted to come forth, they'll tell you they work on
okay.
I know.
Go ahead.
They
thought he was a nutcase.
That's special.
They used to laugh at me in the studio when I had George on.
Oh, I know. They used to make fun of George.
Even the engineers, the producers of the show would say, oh, man, that's bull crap. That's BS, you know?
Right.
Well, what are you guys talking about?
But first of all, I want to clarify that clip that you just played. In that clip, George was actually talking about the government's work with cloning, right?
Yes.
Government cloning of physical bodies. That's what he was talking about. Let me just say this because it's important for people to understand.
Okay.
The transfer of memory into a clone so the clone can continue to function as the body it's supposed to be, the cloned body, is not the transfer of any soul energy. Those beings, those cloned beings have no soul energy in them. They are simply EBEs. Or BEs, biological entities. That's what they are. And that's what George was talking about, that those beings are soulless. They simply have memory transplant, right, which is not the same thing as soul. And George did say that your soul memory is quite different to your physical memory that's in the brain itself, a physical storage. Your brain is a physical processing storage unit. You know, it's like your computer. Exactly. Your brain works exactly the same as your computer. Your mind is linked to your soul. And your mind also links to your brain. So your things are connected. But when you do, George was not talking about real people. He was talking about clone people.
I understand. I got it. But still, they didn't even believe that. They don't even believe.
No, people. And why would people believe it?
Women, they don't even
believe
that the reptilians shapeshift and become a tree or dog or cat. Look at all these dogs walking around. I don't believe that.
I don't believe that either.
You don't believe that? The reptilians can't do that?
No.
They
can shapeshift, but I don't believe that they shapeshift to be cats and dogs and things. Why would they? What's the point?
They want to stay hidden. They don't want to be in harm's way. If they show up walking down the street, what would happen? Go back to 1938.
Well, they're going to shapeshift to be a human. If they're going to shapeshift.
Well,
the object
they can shapeshift to be a tree.
Shapeshift into a human. Well, what would be the point of that?
Why not?
What would be the point?
The point being that if I were alien, I would shapeshift to be something besides what I truly am because I would be in harm's way walking down the street. If I were walking down the street as a real reptilian, what would happen? Help me out. What would happen?
Well, people would either think you were wearing a party clothes or they would...
They would get their guns and shoot me.
Right.
No, they wouldn't.
Right.
They would shoot each other.
Hopefully.
I know they would shoot me.
If you were a reptilian, hopefully they would shoot you. I'm not fond of the reptilians. But there are things. That's what I'm saying. I was saying just a minute ago. Let's get some reality here. Let's get some practicality into it. Generally speaking, the universe and the highly evolved beings do not waste energy. So just for the example you were saying, you know, a reptilian wanting to shapeshift to be a tree or a bird, that makes no sense. Now, I also want to say why I said because there's no
purpose. But why not if I can hide rather than be in harm's way? Why not?
Hide. Why would you come if you were, now think about this. If you were a reptilian and you wanted to come to be this, to this planet, why would you want to come to be on this planet? Why would you be here? You know, this is an argument. Right.
Many of them are underground now as we speak. You talked about Dorsey the other day.
Excuse me saying this, Russell, but this is the kind of round in circles argument that goes nowhere and can never be resolved because it's based on a belief. You believe that they shapeshift and can do all these shapeshiftings. I don't believe they do that. And the reason
you don't.
I don't know. I'm not a reptilian, so I don't know. Maybe they can, maybe they can't. The reason I would never believe something like that, and I'm using this word strongly, believe it, the reason I wouldn't believe it is because it makes no logical sense to me. I see no point in it. Therefore, I could be correct in my belief or I could be mistaken in my belief. And that is something which is the root problem of most of the things that you were just talking about with what people can and cannot accept. It's what we believe. And most of us, when we have a strong belief, are unwilling to say, I could be correct in my belief or I could be incorrect in my belief, because a belief is not the same thing as knowledge. If you know something and you know it 100% certainly for you, then it becomes your truth. And you're going to stand on that ground of truth until either you die or somebody proves with provable knowledge that you are mistaken. But when it comes to what people believe, they are not willing to examine their beliefs for a variety of reasons. They hold strong beliefs about things, usually based on misguided knowledge, mistaken knowledge, wrong knowledge, or brainwashing. We do not arrive at beliefs in any other way. We are not born with beliefs. We arrive at beliefs, and the belief comes to us primarily from brainwashing, first from our parents, then from our schools, and then most powerfully from our churches and religious leaders. And those are the three things that by the time we are adults, we have been programmed by. And those programs have put beliefs in us, which we find it then impossible almost to question. We don't question our beliefs, and we should. We should question everything. God gave us a brain so that we could learn to understand. And in order to become understanding.
If you're programmed, you know, and you move about the earth and you think Jerry Springer is the greatest in the world, whatever, and the stuff that he talks about. And how do you change that? Because you have the fear of being wrong if you go against what Jerry Springer is saying, right? The fear, back to fear.
You just went right back to the beginning of an hour ago when I said the thing that we have to watch in our lives is our fear. We have to start deprogramming ourselves. Now, those books that George has, the handbooks for the new paradigm, they were designed to deprogram the brain, to break down the old way of thinking. But when you continue to read them, they simply reprogrammed you with what the Pleiadians want you to think. They didn't open a way to deprogram you and said, okay, now you've got a clean sheet of paper. Now you as a unique individual, what do you think? Not what do you believe or what has somebody else said, but what do you think? Because we all need to find our own truth.
Okay.
Truth
Let
is always the same.
Let me do this. One, and I want you to comment on this.
Yeah.
Now, Laura Eisenhower, because we're talking about thinking, belief, programming, the great-great-granddaughter of President Eisenhower, who met with the aliens back in 1954, I think at Holloman Air Force Base, and made a deal with the aliens.
Right.
Saying, keep
Correct.
Abducting people.
Yeah.
Is that right? And they
yes,
say, well, we'll give
true.
You the cell phone, and we give you the internet, and we give you all this stuff, or we give you Bitcoin, whatever, right? Is that was that the deal
Correct.
That was made?
Yeah, this is true.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
fine. So
Basically,
he
yes.
consciously... He constantly made that deal with them, right? Here's what Laura's saying. Just a little bit. It's only going to be 50 seconds. Listen, and comment.
The relationship that he was sent specifically to draw me into this recruitment, while this whole time I just thought that I had run into a person that was involved in going to Mars and I had the option to go or not go. And when I found out that I was specifically targeted to go and that if I were to leave that I might be kidnapped or taken anyway, I knew that I was dealing with something very heavy and it wasn't feeling positive. Whether or not I was going to go, it didn't feel positive. Because initially I thought, well, this doesn't sound like a terrible thing to protect the human genome. I just know I have a mission on Earth. But finding out that this was a manipulation and it was set up to program the people involved to have them believe that they're helping humanity was where a lot of very well-intentioned people I was seeing getting caught up in an agenda that is not serving us as a humanity.
Okay, anyway, we were on the same subject, programming people.
Right.
You know, so this it goes on and on and on, and it's really confusing after a while, right? So I guess that's
yes.
why the government at some point say, we're not telling those people anything. We'll maintain control because we want to control these people on Earth. You know, we want to keep them on the plantation. And so we won't tell them anything but tell them about Jesus Christ and Buddha and Baha'u'llah or Muhammad in the traditional sense of the word so that they can think it's a big guy in the sky who created all of this and they'd be beholden to us as preachers or priests or whatever, or the President of the United States, right? Yes?
Right.
It's all about control.
Yes.
Because even
Absolutely.
I'm looking on the back of ETA, it says, today more than ever, it is imperative to the United Governments of the world. ETA serves as a stepping stone towards that goal. It is a tale about immortal life and the evolution of the human species here on Earth. Right?
Right.
Yes?
Right.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Anyway. We could discuss this for thousands and thousands and thousands of hours. And you saying in August, something is going to come upon us to awaken us a little bit more. Is that what you say?
I am told to expect to see events across the face of the planet in the month of August this year, which will open new opportunities and change direction for the race, for humanity on the planet, changes, big changes that will affect everybody. And so I don't know what those changes are, and I don't know how they will manifest themselves, but I am certainly looking forward to seeing and observing what happens. And I'm thinking around the middle of August is when I'm really going to be paying attention and watch what's happening, what's being disclosed, what's being seen. Because I have a feeling, and I don't know this for sure, but I have a feeling that it could well be that the governments of the world start making known their presence, the very real presence of the extraterrestrials who are on
Why
would
this
they planet
do that?
And have been
Why would
forever.
They do that? They've been hiding it this long. Why would they do that?
Well, I would think that if the governments decide to do it, again, you have to look at their agenda. And
The
governments
control.
Of the world decide, exactly. And so I would say that if they decide to do it, it will be in relation to bringing in some kind of one world order, the global government. See, here's something, and this is a whole new subject and would take way too long for us to start on today,
sure.
I think. But
sure.
the agenda for one world government is the same agenda for the really, really bad people on this planet who are Earth humans wanting to maintain control and using interaction with certain extraterrestrials to bring it about through technology, etc., right? And the agenda of a spiritually evolved higher hierarchy of extraterrestrials who genuinely do want to see the human race as an Earth human species evolve to that higher level of experience that many others have reached in the cosmos. And so in order to do it, it has to be one people choosing to move forward, because the good guys are never going to force choice on you. Therefore, you need a collective voice to speak for the whole in order, in other words, the majority rules, for the whole to choose to join those who will help them move forward. You need the same one voice for those who wish to control in a negative, evil way. So the goal of one voice for humanity is the same. But the reason for that one voice is the opposite ends of the pole. One is to evolve the species. The other is to control and damage the species, change the species to a slave labor force forever. And by the way, they're trying to do that in some measure through these global inoculations and controls that they're putting on us under the excuse of healthcare. So be very careful about what you choose to put into your bodies, because, again, you need to find the agenda behind everything. So what can we do to be sure that we choose the right side? Well, we can do what I've already said. Get out of the fear mode by telling yourself literally you have as an individual nothing to fear, and then start looking at what is true for you. Start right at the basis of your own home, your own self, inside your own four walls, and say, wait a minute, what is it that I believe? And really start looking at everything that you hold to be true in your life and questioning where you got that belief from. And I promise you that if you do that, you will find that 95% or more of what you believe has come to you from somebody else, not from your own insight, your own inner knowing, your own instincts, your own self-awareness, your own heart. It has not come to you from within. And remember that it is your heart within you, your soul within you, which is direct connection to the source, to the creator, to spirit. If you like, to your guardian angels and guides and helpers in spirit and on the other side who are helping you. This is where you need to find what you choose to believe and make it your truth. Make it the framework on which you build your life. Not the beliefs that were given to you by anybody else, in any way, shape, or form, and for any reason at all, because there are two things you need. You need to clean out your fears and restrictions which hold you back, and those are nearly always beliefs given to you by other people, because the Creator never gives you fear. The Creator only pours love into you every step of the way, a continual outpouring of love. Unconditional love, which is the stuff of the universe, the glue of the universe that holds it all together. So you can be sure if there is anything in you which generates fear, like a religion that tells you you'll go to hell and damnation. That's ultimate fear being imposed on you and does not come from the source or the one you think of as God. If you believe in a God and you believe that God is going to sell you, send you to hell and damnation because you made some mistakes in this life, then you're believing in the wrong God. I promise you that, right? It's not the Creator. It's not the Source, because the Source pours out only love, forgiveness, and joy, not punishment, right? right. that the wrathful right. God, the biblical God, is not the real God, right? It's a made-up God, right? And so get rid of fear and question your beliefs and start at the very beginning with the small things. The small things.
Right.
Somebody told you when you were a kid, don't walk under a ladder because it's unlucky. Well, work it out. They tell you not to walk under a ladder because somebody up the ladder with a paint pot might drop it on you. It's got nothing to do with the thing called luck. It's got to do with the fact that somebody might drop a pot of paint on you. So don't do it. Examine every belief you have and get rid of those which are not logical, not common sense, and you don't understand them or can prove the logic of them. Gain knowledge. Get rid of the belief, gain knowledge. And have faith in the Creator. Have faith in the Source. Have faith that you are a child of that Creator and are loved no matter what you do. So, you know, ultimately, you're always loved.
So when people go to nohopes.net, they will see a lot of material that you always left that's still up there, including your book, ETA, A Future Tale by Jillian DiArmo.
Oh, that's just it. And Sandra Viola, that's Sayarda. That's Sayarda and I, my friend Sayarda and I wrote that. And it's just a story, but it is a true story. It is a story.
Okay.
It's a fiction that really is true.
Okay. But how about The Violent Flame and Other Meditations by Jillian DiArmo?
Well, that's a little meditation book I wrote when I was doing classes in metaphysics, and it's several short little meditations for a variety of things that you can use quickly, easily, and it's an efficient little book. The universe doesn't want to waste time. When they tell me things, they're always brief. They're never long-winded like me. They say a great deal very quickly and in very little space.
The other small book, but gets to the essence of things in terms of the formation of the world and how we got here as humans, would be The Return of the Anunnaki.
That's a book. Yeah, that's a booklet. That's just a little booklet. I wrote that as a precursor to a talk I was doing about the Anunnaki. I was asked when I was in London fairly few years ago, and George was doing a long weekend over their workshop, and the participants in his workshop asked me to speak about the Anunnaki. So I wrote that little booklet as an introduction to the lecture. The little book, Chalice of the Dove, that's a book I wrote years ago, 20-odd years ago, and it's what I would classify as a useful book. Again, it's in short pieces, it's a question and answer format, and all the answers are exactly the way Spirit told it to me. In other words, there were things that Spirit had told me, and so even though I wrote it down, all of it, the information, except two answers to two questions I wrote myself, because Spirit had never commented on. The rest of it is just stuff that Spirit told me. And if you're interested in self-development, development of the soul, that is, you know, evolution of the soul, it's a useful little book. It gives you all the clues on how to do it. It actually teaches you how to do it. So.
Okay.
It is useful.
Well, it's been a pleasure on this Saturday afternoon, July 2nd, 2022. To have had you on to explain to us and help us to further develop and reach ascension, I guess, one day, if we take control, be responsible, and get rid of all the nuances of fear and hate and jealousy and all that. Okay, but thank you very much for being with us today. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. And happy 4th of July to everybody.
All right, great. Thank you. You have a great weekend, and we'll talk again soon.
Bye, Noel.
Okay, bye-bye now.